Hey, everyone. Welcome to Solutions for the Underaffiliated, a show for people who want positivity, hope, and examples of improving the overall health of humanity. I'm Eric, and I'm with my co-host, Habanero. Today, we're going to be talking about economic justice. Today, we've got Vicky Meath, Executive Director of Just Economics. Welcome, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. So, I am the director of Just Economics, like you said. I've been with Just Economics since 2010, and I'm really invested in this work and committed to the work that we do to build a more just and sustainable local economy.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about what that means. Like, are there specific initiatives you guys have, or how does that work?
Yeah, we're an economic justice advocacy organization. So we look at how do we impact the systems that have created economic injustice. And we do that work with and in communities that are most impacted by economic injustice and work to advocate for solutions. So we work on three primary issues, living wages and worker conditions, affordable housing, and better transit.
Let's describe a little bit about what that looks like for a family. So when you talk about a living wage, imagine them all working together, whether it's transit, affordable housing, and economic injustice. What's a day in the life look like?
Well, I mean, I think that what we strive to do is to create a local economy where everyone who has the opportunity to survive and thrive and be a participant in our community and contributing in the way in which makes them feel good and that they want to. And so, you know, when we're thinking about, let's say, a working family, like, you know, I'm a single mother and my daughter's off in college now. But, you know, what does it take for me to make sure that I'm able to put a roof over my head and food on the table for me and my child? And then also have adequate transportation, whether that's a working car or taking the bus or other ways to get around and making sure that I'm able to kind of move through the community and not really struggle with economic crisis. And a lot of people that we're working with, I mean, this is a hard town to live in, really, economically.
Yeah, talk about that, because I'm hearing a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean, we have the highest fair market rent in the state. And we have one of the lower set of wages, essentially, for metropolitan areas. So when we're looking at, you know, Charlotte, Durham, Winston-Salem, Wilmington, you know, the other more urban places in our state, we're on the low end in terms of wages, but we have the highest housing costs. And so this is a hard town to live in. We also live in the state of North Carolina, where, frankly, it's a bad state to be a worker or a renter. We have challenges at the statewide level in terms of policy that prevent a lot of positive changes that we've seen in other states or across the country. And, you know, this is one of the least unionized states in the nation. So we've had less of the ability to gather workers together and advocate for themselves. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, okay, originally. And you know, up in Cleveland, kind of moving from Cleveland, I've lived all over the country, but I most recently moved to Asheville from Cleveland and moving from a city where we're driving around and seeing, you know, proud to be union stickers on the back of pickup trucks to the South, I was really kind of taken aback by, you know, people feeling like almost like unions were a bad name. And it's like, you know, unions have what brought us, like, weekends and the 40-hour work week,
right,
and the end to child labor and, you know, all of that kind of good stuff, which is stuff that we celebrate where I've come from. And it was a little bit different here in the South.
One of the things that comes to mind is maybe I'm a small business owner and I'd love to pay my folks more. But that cuts into a lot of things. It cuts into profits. It cuts into, you know, probably some benefits. What do you tell folks? I know you have a wage certification kind of program. How do you talk to businesses about raising the wages?
Yeah, sure. Maybe I'll back up just a little bit and tell you about our living wage certification program, and then I'll get to your
question. That sounds great.
So, yeah, when we work on living wages, we're working at the policy level. You know, so we've worked with the city of Asheville, Buncombe County, to have them pay their workers a living wage. We work at a statewide level. We're part of the core team that's pushing for a raise in the minimum wage, which is still $7.25 an hour and has been since 2009. So just side note, think about what your housing costs were in 2009 and the fact that the minimum wage at the federal level and here in North Carolina is still $7.25 an hour. Anyways, so we're working on living wages from this policy perspective, but we're also working from living wages dealing with the employer sector, the business sector, and we have the largest voluntary living wage certification program in the country, and we actually lead the national network of living wage certification programs. And our program is meant to reward and recognize employers that pay a living wage, to encourage employers that don't pay a living wage to raise their wages to meet our standards, and to encourage consumers to support the type of community we want to live in by supporting those businesses that are paying a living wage and you know, making it easier for workers to survive in this community. So, but this is a supportive program. We certainly understand that there's unique challenges that small business owners face. We're in this place where we're working with both workers and small business owners to co-create a more just and sustainable local economy. Just getting back to your question about how do we talk to business owners, I think that there's a number of reasons that small business owners would become living wage certified, want to do that work, want to make sure that they are paying a living wage. And one is, you know, a lot of our small business owners, they live here in our community, right? So economically, it's better for our economic community if low and middle income folks have more money in their pockets, right? Because then they can spend it at your local business, right? Whereas like some our large corporations, their shareholders are all over the place and not necessarily here in Asheville. So there's that local economic reason. There's also, you know, the moral reason. But when we're talking about a business case for the living wage, there's also that too. Because when you're paying a living wage and your workers can, you know, put a roof over their head and food on their table, then, you know, they're first of all more productive. If it's easier if you only have to have one job. If you've got to work 80 hours a week just to survive, you're likely to be more tired, to have more health issues, all of that. But you're also likely to be looking for other work, right? And so a turnover is higher with businesses that don't pay a living wage. And so a lot of our small business owners kind of see that business case where if they're paying a living wage, if they're taking care of their workers tend to stay longer and they're saving money on training and development, recruitment, retention, all of that.
So we had a similar conversation last week mm-hmm. with a woman, Shannon Peel, who is here from the Association of Educators. And it's this issue of productivity. And I think what I keep struggling with is, why do we not recognize that when we make things difficult for people to live, it makes them less productive for business and for the whole country, and that makes people dissatisfied with their politicians, it makes them dissatisfied with the whole country, it makes them sick and unhealthy. And so why do you think policy is set in such a way that we're not really helping people live a good life and achieve really the American dream?
If I'm going to psychoanalyze the entire culture of our country, we might have to go into a whole nother, you know,
we got a little time.
Whole nother hour. But, you know, I would say that oftentimes policy is short term. Like a lot of times our society is short term thinking. We're thinking, oh, if we pay these workers more, it cuts into our profit. We're not thinking about training and development. We're not thinking of the money down the road that we're saving. We're thinking about what we have to pay right now.
Opportunity. Costs.
Yeah. And so I think that we as a community need to be thinking long term. We need to be thinking about what happens when we have when we're paying people a living wage and we have a healthier community and workers have more money in their pockets to spend at our local businesses. And we have a flourishing economy, but we're often creating policy that's a little too short-sighted, and we're kind of forcing people to be short-sighted in order to compete in the marketplace.
So I'm curious, well, I actually just wanted to make a comment when you were talking about the, you know, why business owners would want to do it. And I don't know if I'm the only person here who spends time on Facebook with WACS.
Going in?
Pardon me? But you as a business owner will get dragged online if you are not offering that living wage now. So I think there's a lot of peer pressure, and there's a lot of there's a lot of potential employee pressure. So I really think that this broadcasting and this publishing of how many places are voluntarily offering a minimum wage is such a super incentive for other businesses to not want to be one of those quote unquote bad guys or people that doesn't care about the community or doesn't care about their workers. So I just think that I'm a relative newcomer here, but I've really seen that be effective. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And I would say that, you know, kind of the flip side or positive side of that is also we have a fairly conscious consumer base compared to a lot of other places that I've lived across the country. So we do have people that are intentionally spending their money at living wage certified businesses. And so so on the positive side of kind of what you're talking about, we also have, you know, a benefit for businesses in getting more customers because they're living wage certified and people shopping there.
So I want to touch on something else that you talked about, which is housing affordability. And you went through this briefly. I think it'd be really helpful to help provide the landscape of Asheville. Who owns, who doesn't own? Do you know the percentage of folks who are renting versus who own versus who live here and own? And could you tell that story for folks to help them really understand? Because Asheville's a little bit different than a lot of places when it comes to affordability and renting and owning.
You know, first of all, as far as our work on affordable housing at Just Economics, it's somewhat the newest part of our work. And it's the newest part of our work because it's hard to work on. It's hard to find those pathways for us to create change because we have limitations in public policy. We have limitations in what we can tell people to do with their property. There's this whole like private property, like, you know, rights kind of thing, particularly in the South.
There's also been such extraordinary change in the real estate market across the country over what, the last 5 years at least?
Yeah, well, and that's what I was going to say is, so I am less able to kind of spit out some of the facts and figures that I can around living wages because I've been working on that for 13 plus years with affordable housing in terms of the percentage of renters and that type of thing. But I think your listeners know that we're beyond an affordable housing crisis. Like, we are deep in problems with affordable housing. And I would say pre-pandemic that we were in an affordable housing crisis. I would say at this place that we're at right now, I won't say post-pandemic, I just had COVID in November and, you know, still going, folks. So we act like it's not. But, you know, at this place that we're at in the pandemic, we are seeing a problem that Asheville was having for a long time and a lot of other communities were having for a long time. We're seeing this problem exacerbated across the country. And, you know, in reality, in my opinion, I think we need a federal response to housing. You know, the original Build Back Better federal policy that was being proposed and that was kind of held up by Senator Manchin, you know, it had some historic investments in housing. And kind of when you look at what's happened in housing across the country, and I'll circle back around and come to Asheville in a second. When you look at what happened with housing is we in the, you know, economic downturn of 2008-2009, we stopped building. We stopped building first homes, you know, starter homes. We stopped building the amount of housing that we were building at that time, and this is nationwide. This is not Asheville, right? And builders were looking at how could they stay solvent, right? And so a lot of them transitioned to kind of higher end homes, a lot less of them, but doing more work and getting paid more and making a bigger profit that way to be able to survive that economic downturn. No shade to those builders. I mean, they had to do what they had to do to put roofs over their heads and food on the tables for their families. But what's happened is, you know, the supply and demand issue kind of was impacted then, and there's other factors on that. So we're in a housing supply shortage, and I think there's all kinds of reasons why the pandemic might have exacerbated that problem across the country. And so this problem that Asheville already had, now the whole country is really seeing that problem in a significant way, and, you know, Asheville's just gotten worse, right? And so I think you're listeners know we're in an affordable housing crisis. It's super difficult to find housing that is affordable if you're renting or buying. I mean, last year there were several articles that came out in the Citizen Times around, like, there were no houses, like zero, in the Asheville area that were under like $250,000, right, for sale. And, you know, rents for a one bedroom apartment, you know, our living wage is based on the cost of housing. It's been going up, and employers are like, wow, it's hard to keep up with that. And I hear that, but it's also like, you know, when rents are well over $1,000 for a one bedroom apartment in Asheville, it's, you know, how are workers supposed to survive?
What do we do to get people to think big picture?
Well, if I had a crystal ball and could figure this out, I might be getting paid a little bit more.
That's a fair answer, honestly.
I mean, I think that these are big questions that we need to tackle as a community, right?
Right.
And say, we're not going to impact the entire country, but let's think about how we can start thinking this way in Asheville. How can we have more strategic conversations? How can we welcome different ideas and the diversity of opinions in our community and kind of accept those, not fight those, and start looking long term? And I think it sounds kind of utopian, you know, and maybe it is, but I do think that it's possible that impacting this long, you know, short term versus long term thinking, this is a societal problem. And, you know, particularly in the United States, in our world, based on capitalism, you know, a lot of times we're figuring out how to make the quick dollar before someone else does. And so, like I said, I don't think that we're going to impact the country and change the culture, but I do think, and, you know, maybe I'm just an optimist, but I do think that we have the ability to change that here in our community and really have the conversations and talk with more people about this kind of thinking.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that we have an opportunity to do on the show is to focus locally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what, you know, we're realizing as we go through the show is that Asheville has specific problems that are specific to Asheville, but in a lot of cases, they're not. Living wage is a national problem, but how mm-hmm. you solve it may be local.
Right.
Same thing with housing.
Mm-hmm.
We have specific issues, may be local. Can you help folks understand a little bit about some of the policies? And again, they're hard to undo. We're all Americans. We understand the profit motive, but are there a few things that folks can be thinking about from a policy perspective? Because I like what you're saying about meeting halfway. Let's collaborate to find a solution. So are there a few things from a policy perspective that folks could be thinking about, just opening their minds to?
Yeah, sure. You know, so when it comes to affordable housing, we have, you know, if we think of policies in terms of sticks or carrots, we don't have a lot of sticks. And that's, to me, one of the problems. And that's because of a statewide policy. A lot of people will say, oh, the local politicians, they'll blame the state legislature. But to be fair, the state legislature does have a lot of impact on the fact that we don't have many sticks. We don't have many ways to make someone do something, you know, but we have some carrots. And so when we're particularly thinking about local policy, we need to be thinking about what are the carrots. And, you know, I think that the ways in which the city and county incentivize affordable housing, I think the other thing is that the city and county own property. They own land, various parcels of land, and they couldn't own more land because, you know, they have resources that you and I don't have. And so using some of our city and county owned land to build affordable housing, I think, And this is kind of going back to the last question around the long-term, short-term thinking. I think one of the things that we need to do is we need to have more yes in my backyard folks. So if you've heard the term NIMBY before, it's like not in my backyard. So it's like, oh, we want affordable housing, but we don't want those poor people living in my neighborhood, you know, or in my backyard. And we need more of an understanding in our community about the benefits. You know, sometimes when we hear about housing developments, there's a whole bunch of people that'll get like riled up and be like, no, the traffic, the trees, the, you know, the this, the that. And we have to say, like, look, if we're going to build, it's first of all, it's more environmental. You know, back when the Charlotte 101 was kind of a topic, right? A bunch of people were upset about some trees. Okay. I'm an environmentalist. And just from that perspective, would we rather have like a couple of trees in the city center be cut down than clearing a whole side of a mountain or that's out in the country to build housing developments?
And I'm not sure everybody knows about this Charlotte 101. What is that?
Yeah, and I don't want to go deep into it. It's kind of one of those things that on WEX and Asheville politics and stuff will get a lot of folks riled up. So I'm not taking a stand on it. I'm just saying.
No, just what it is.
It was a development over on Charlotte Street. It was a proposed development there was a bunch of details around it, but there was a lot of opposition to the development.
And what they were looking to do was put in a whole bunch of housing in a relatively small area.
Yeah, there was some old homes and old historic homes and some trees that people didn't want taken down or whatever, but there was going to be more density basically in terms of the housing and some homes and some apartments put up there. And, you know, that's a very short version. And, you know, some folks over there, it got organized and posed it. And again, not taking a stand on that, but, you know, some of the reasons, like, you know, one of the reasons being the trees, right? There's some old growth trees. Like I said, I'm an environmentalist. I love trees. I think we need an urban forester at the city of Asheville, and we need to be talking about our tree canopy and all of that kind of stuff. But when we're thinking about where does that housing go, if we want more housing, it's more environmental to put housing in the city center or within our city limits where we're close to services, where we're close to grocery stores, where we're close to public transportation and all of those things, than cutting down a side of a mountain that, you know, and a whole bunch more trees and putting people further out where they have to drive their cars to get in town, all that kind of stuff. So anyways, just one aspect of this whole, like, yes, in my backyard, we need to start talking as a community and thinking long term about what would it mean if we had sustainable development in the city limits of Asheville, where we could build affordable housing and also be environmental in the aspect that we're building in a place that's close to goods and services. And you know, what would that look like, and not kind of oppose every development. Now, that's not to say that there's not reasons to oppose some of the developments that are coming up in our community, but we need to start talking about what would we support and not saying no to everything or getting all our neighbors all riled up because there might be more traffic.
I actually want to bring up another point, being, again, the devil's advocate coming from another aspect. So we all come not from, we're none of us here are Asheville natives. We all come from bigger cities. And the workers do not stay and live in the prime real estate of the city, right? So, I mean, where you come from, Cleveland wasn't like that. I'm from New York. That totally wasn't like it. They get pushed out when the area gets gentrified, right? That's pretty typical. And then the workers have to commute in. So has any community been able to overcome that? Because I see that as what's happening now. People can't afford to live here, so they have to be moving out into the outskirts because of what's been happening with the real estate, right? People are coming in, retiring here. They retire from someplace like one of our big cities with a gigantic pension, and they've sold their $500,000 house, and for half that price they can buy something here, and that pushes out, you know, one of the local workers. So how do you counter that argument or that reality that so many other places have had to face up to?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I would say that, first of all, not all cities are created equal. And even comparing Cleveland to New York, because we actually have the opposite problem in Cleveland, is that, you know, real estate in downtown Cleveland is where workers live because it is cheaper. It's not. So even comparing New York and Cleveland is very different than, and certainly comparing Asheville to Cleveland or New York, is there's a different scenario. So I hear Fair you point. On gentrification, and I hear you in that terms, but we also don't have this infrastructure that New York does. We don't have subway systems. We don't have and we're working on transportation. I hope we'll talk about that in a minute. But we don't have the type of transportation system to get people into the city center. So I think we have a whole set of unique challenges. And, you know, Asheville's gotten so expensive. But go 10 minutes outside of Asheville, 15 minutes outside of Asheville, 30 minutes outside of Asheville, we still are not even close to finding affordable housing. We don't have affordable housing in this county, you know, and I think that problem, you know, the Asheville housing crisis has been long before the pandemic, but I do think that some of the housing crisis that's happening on the outskirts of Buncombe County and even our surrounding counties has been exacerbated in the last several years.
Yeah.
And so I think this is a problem that's, even when we're talking outside of Asheville, that exists to an extent that, and so those same things are true. If you live in Candler and you're opposing a development because you don't want the traffic or that type of thing, we have the same kind of issues that we need to be talking about. Yes, in my backyard, what makes a good sustainable development, and how can we work with our local governments and have our local governments work with developers to make sure that as a community, we're getting what we need out of development, which to me, we need more housing.
We need to challenge ourselves to think long term and to think about sustainability and truly to think about collaboration.
And at Just Economics, we have an organization that's built on organizing and bringing people that are impacted by economic injustice and people of economic privilege together to help build a better economic community. And so I would love to just kind of tell you a little bit about what we're doing in regards to affordable housing and how that kind of fits with developing solutions and collaborations. You know, one, we are working on something called a centralized rental application that came directly from people that are struggling with the lack of affordable housing. And so, like, when you go to, you're looking for housing, you go pay a $50 application fee there, a $75 application fee here, a $40 application fee here. This is one place that we're getting landlords to voluntarily sign on to. It's in tech development yet, has not come out, but where you pay one small fee for a background check and can apply to multiple places. So this is like a solution, right?
That's huge.
Yeah, it came directly from people who are struggling with this and saying, like, why can't we do this? And we've been working on it for a while. The tech's actually a lot more complicated than I, you know, had originally anticipated. But it's a solution, right? And it's a small solution to a small little piece. But that's what we're doing at Just Economics, is taking pieces. We're also working on building a people's agenda on housing. It's similar to what we did on transit, and we've been really successful on, is looking at, like, all those different pieces that we can influence, and say, what's our objectives as the people? So we don't ask our local elected leaders to come up with the solutions and then ask us to support it. We come up with solutions,
right,
and we ask them to support it,
right,
you know? And so it's what we did with transit. It's what we're working on with housing. So I would invite your listeners to come collaborate with us, be part of developing these solutions and help us figure it out.
Yeah. And I want to add to that real quick. It just comes from my experience in business. This happens all the time. Hey, if you see a problem in the organization or in the market, fix it. You come up with the idea and go do it. And I think that's a great example that you're providing for folks. And there's no reason we all can't be doing that. Take it upon ourselves, take responsibility.
There's all these places for people to get involved. We have a workers' assembly, we have a policy advocacy committee, a grassroots education committee, a living wage certification committee. We've got all of these different things because the work doesn't come from me. It doesn't come from our staff. It comes, you know, we help facilitate it and kind of bring it, birth it into the world, kind of like social justice midwives. But the work actually comes from community members, many of whom are, because we spend a lot of time working to build up the leadership and organizing skills of people that are most directly impacted by these problems. And because we believe that the best community solutions come from when the people that are most impacted by the problems are involved and engaged in the solutions.
So that's Just Economics NC.
WNC as in Western North Carolina, justeconomicswnc.org. You know, we're a small organization. We only have 4 full-time staff and a full-time volunteer through a program. And so we're doing a lot of stuff with a small staff. And that's only because we do the majority of our work with our community members and people who are interested and impacted by these issues.
One of the things that I know we want to talk about briefly is transportation.
Yep.
And, you know, Habanero, you brought up a really good point. If you've lived in New York or Chicago, everyone's on the bus. If you've lived in a smaller town, not so many folks on the bus. Vicky, what's going on?
Well, I mean, we've been working to make the bus system better for a while. And this was not something, you know, when I started, we were the living wage organization, and that was our primary issue. And we have this program called Voices for Economic Justice, which is a leadership and community organizing training for people living on a low income. And back in 2012, when we ran that class, it's an 8-week class, and they work on a project. And the project of that class was like, you know, a lot of bus riders were in that class, or people that lived in communities of bus riders saying, look, they're making some changes. They passed a transit master plan in 2009. They're making some changes to the bus system, but we don't feel like they asked us, you know, like what we need. And so we got involved. We started organizing and meeting weekly for like a year, developing the 19-point agenda for transportation reform. And we launched a campaign in 2014. And one of our first things was to get Sunday bus service. And it was one of our first victories is when you see the bus on Sundays, that was because bus riders organized together and got the city to fund that. So we're still going, you know, all these years later. We're still working on transit. The bus system has improved a lot. A lot of things kind of backtracked because of the pandemic, right? But the bus system's a lot better. The challenge is that, you know, the city of Asheville, and to their credit, you know, they have increased the budget for transportation or for transit, our bus system, significantly since we started this work. It's more than doubled since Just Economics and our Better Buses folks got involved in transit advocacy. And so we've gotten a lot of big improvements, you know, things like Sunday bus service. But this comes out of the general fund, you know, and everybody wants their taxes cut and, you know, all of those things. But where do we get the money for more buses? And so one of the things that we're doing right now is trying to work with the county and help the county realize that the city is in the county, you know? And so maybe there's some responsibility there to help, you know, both the county has transportation too. They do it at a different level. They have, you know, they run Mountain Mobility and they also do the Trailblazer routes. And there's a lot of things that can be improved right now with the city. We're working to extend hours further into the evening. We want all routes going until 10 p.m. and to get more frequency into South Asheville. So, and on the 170, that's the bus that goes out, you know, past the Ingalls Warehouse and through Swannanoa and to Black Mountain. Those are the South Asheville buses, and the 170 are the buses with the least frequency. So we're trying to get some more frequency there. Because we more people are able to take the bus. And, you know, I've always had a car. I've been a poor single parent, but I've always had a car. But my car's broken down. So I ride the bus, and I've been riding the bus, and it's actually a great experience.
Yeah, it really is. Riding a bus, you know, I lived in New York and Chicago, and everyone rides the bus to work. It's just easier than driving. And I've lived in Louisville, Kentucky, and I lived in Charlotte, and I haven't ridden the bus here, but it's just sit back and relax, enjoy the ride. I mean, it truly is it's comfortable, it's low stress. I don't quite understand why people don't do it, but that's just me.
Well, I mean, I think first of all, it in the past it wasn't reliable in terms of timing, and it didn't have enough frequency, and we're improving on all of that. And so I'd encourage your listeners to get on the bus. It's a dollar,
right?
You know,
right.
So take a dollar, get on the bus, learn how the system works. And, you know, what we're trying to do at Just Economics is make the bus better for people who have to ride the bus, and also like make the bus an experience for and better for people who have cars but can opt to leave their cars home and help with parking and traffic and accidents, right, and all of that
pollution
stuff. Yeah, environmental aspects and taking the bus. So we're chugging away at trying to work to improve the bus system. It's improved a lot over the last, you know, 10 years, and so I'd encourage our listeners to check it out and then, you know, learn more about what Just Economics and our Better Buses Together folks are doing to improve it and make it even better.
Yeah. So now, is information about the buses available on your website, or is that you go to the city? Where do you
city,
find that?
The city
website?
Yeah.
Thanks.
But you, even if you're taking the bus, you can also just like Google Maps, right? You know, you got
There's
maps
map.
On your phone. I mean, just if you just have the like Maps app on your phone, right? Switch it to public transportation and, you know, it'll tell you what's the next bus that's coming out here.
I did not know that.
Google's made a lot of things easier. There's no excuse to not ride the bus. But unfortunately, we've got to get going because Vicky's on a time constraint today.
I am so glad you made time for us today. Well, out of that schedule
so nice
you're
talking
in.
Talking with y'all.
Yeah, it was really great. And one of the things that came to mind is it's kind of the bigger picture, which is that when you allow people to have housing and make it affordable, when you provide a way for them to get to and from work, and you provide them a living wage, you're hitting on the social drivers of health. And that's a big deal.
Right.
Because then people can be more productive. Then they can put food on the table and they won't become sick. Crime goes down. So you're doing all of these really basic things. And I feel like, you know, Vicky, what you've brought to us is, can we just be collaborative about this kind of thing? Can we think locally? Can we share? Just because mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. in my backyard doesn't mean it's necessarily bad. And I think big picture, think long term, because all the things we've talked about today, housing, wages, transportation, all benefit people to be more productive. That improves life in the city. And in the long run, it makes all of our lives better. So, Vicky, thanks a lot. Really appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much.